This is Phil Farron. And I am driving home. It's Thursday today. It's been a good week. It is episode 377. I think, you know, it's not going to be too long. We're going to be at 400. 400 episodes. Nobody cares, which it's okay. That is okay. Because I just enjoy talking, so. So I will sit here and talk as long as I want. It's been a good week. That was my coffee cup falling over. It's been a good week. Got a lot of good things done at work. We've been, evaluating some tools, and that seems to go fine. We got a bunch of other little projects going fine. Everything's going fine. Keeping all the balls in the air, and so it's good. It's good. Had some nice meetings this week, and got some clear through some issues, and so, you know, it's good. I also had a breakfast with a buddy on Saturday morning, and then had a breakfast with a buddy this morning, and, it's good to get together with friends and talk. I just love that. Oh, and had a breakfast with a buddy on Monday, too. So this was a 3-breakfast week. That's a good week. Man, that's a good week. Got 3 breakfasts in a row. So that's all puttering along well. All week I've been slogging along, putting in all the edits for Windfall 4. That's all gone fine. I don't think I'll have really any major updates that I need to do or major problems that need to be resolved. So I like that. I do have a little bit of editing that I have to do on one character. I'm going to have to just kind of tweak a little bit because that character also appears in the next book, in book 5. And so now that I know more about that character, which is an interesting part of this process, since the books are overlapping, beta readers are reading a book as I start the next book, and I get about halfway through the book before the information from the beta readers come back. In cases where I am introducing new characters, I actually find out more about those characters in the next book, if they continue on, than I knew about them when I was writing them in the first book, because I'm writing these things so fast that I'm basically roughing in these characters as we go, and I'm discovering things about these characters as I'm writing. So it's like, so that was their background. So because of that, I have learned more about a particular female character named Kulan now that I've written the first part of book 5, and so I'm going to go back to book 4 as I'm doing my final read-through, and I'm going to anticipate, quote-unquote, foreshadow some of those things that I now know about Kulan back in. Thankfully, it's not a huge drastic change. But it is, you know, there is some changes that have to be made. And so I'll do a little bit of tweaking to where I can set it up and then bring it home. I wish I was just a little bit farther, frankly, with book 5, because I stopped writing right in the middle of a run-up to a big dramatic section, and I think I know how that section is going to end at this point. But I'm not exactly sure. And I would really have loved to have gotten through that whole miniature story arc inside the book so that I could then foreshadow all the way through to the ending of it. As it is, I'm going to be flying a little bit blind, but you know, this is part of this exercise. It's just to fly blind and adjust and adapt as I go. You know, that is the fun part of all of this. It's walking in the fog, just seeing enough to get me to the next step, and then, you know, getting to the end of it and going, well, hey, that worked out pretty good. So it's going to be fine. I'd love to say it's going to be good. I feel like the rest of the books have turned out good. So hopefully this one will turn out good, but we'll see. But for right now, we are 2 weeks into June at this point, since it's June 15th. That means I have a week worth of read-through that I have to do, and edits. And then as soon as I get that done, I have to turn around and produce the final production versions of the books, both for publishing and then for Kindle and then for the EPUB, for the Nook, and then run through all those, filling all that stuff out, and then I have to order the 10 copies that I give away for reviews on Amazon, in addition to just the basic giveaway books, and I'll give those books away, and then hopefully that will all get taken care of by very close to July 1st. And then I hop back on book 5. So do a read through of book 5, make sure that now I'm refreshed on book 4. Having just read through it, I read through what I've got on book 5, align whatever things I need to align in terms of characterizations, you know, and then I hit the ground running for the next sprint. And that sprint will be through July and August. And I have a secret goal. I have a secret goal on that one that I would really, really love to have the book actually roughed in by mid-September or mid to late September. Because that's supposed to go to my... mid to late August. Like, if I can catch back a week there and do it, have the book roughed in during, at the beginning of the final week of August, and grab myself a little bit of extra time there, then potentially I could have the books to the beta readers by mid to late September, which would be great, because for the latter half of the year, I call for the book to be returned like at December 1st, and if I could back that up to maybe the week before Thanksgiving, that would help people get done with it before the Christmas holidays really hit at Thanksgiving. And you know, because once you get past that Thanksgiving boundary, you people are done. They are just done for the year. And then that would mean that I would be clear through, I would have the fifth book into production by mid-December, and maybe even take a little week off, although I probably wouldn't. Because as soon as I get book 5 into production, I mean, I'll be working on book 6, I'll be working on book 6 in September and October and November. But, you know, might take a few days off in December writing. It's really hard for me to take days off writing. Because I enjoy it so much. And then B, I kind of want to find out what's going to happen in the book. Because I keep trying, as I'm writing the book, the first 2 months, I have 4 months in there to write, and it's split into two 2-month sections. And basically, the first 2 months that I'm writing, I'm trying to create as many complications as I can. And then the last 2 months that I'm writing, I'm trying to get those complications resolved. So it's fun. I enjoy writing so much. I just enjoy it so much. And it's interesting because I am halfway through book 5 now, and it's 5 books. you know, and it's 400 pages a piece. Those are the first four books, and I'm over 200 pages on that one. So, I mean, we're talking about 1,800 pages I've written so far on this saga, and I'm just flexing my shoulders and stretching my wings. I mean, there's so much more story to tell, and it's just so fun. So it find something. Whoever is listening to this, find something that you enjoy doing that gives you joy. And then it really doesn't matter if you make any money at it. Just, you know, go get a job and make some money and then just come home and do something creative. Because this series is going to be the thing that's going to just chew up my time in the evenings and keep me working during the day. Because I've still got another 9 years to go before I retire. 9 years and 1 month. Actually, 9 years and a half a month now. But with this project in my pocket, knowing that I'm going to be working on this project for the rest of that time, it's like, fine. I'm more than happy to go and spend 34 hours of my time working, making money during the week, knowing that in the evenings I get to go home and write. And actually, the time I spend working away from the writing is good, because I write and a lot of times I'll hit a problem and I'll just go, well, okay, that's it for tonight. And that gives me another 20 hours for it just to mull in the back of my head. To where usually, as I'm driving home from work, I'm thinking about it. It's like, oh yeah, I could do that. Or when I'm driving into work. I mean, it's having that time away from it actually makes it better. So I will probably continue this pattern even after I retire. I will have something else that I do just as a way to, you know, maybe write 5-6 hours a day and then step away from it and go do something else so that I've got time to give, you know, my brain a little chance to kind of mull all the possibilities and come up with something else. Anyway, so it's pretty interesting. Enjoying it a lot. This week, I had a bunch of different possible topics this week. Some really fascinating potential discoveries about DNA and how that the folding of DNA makes a difference in its mechanical properties and how it's interpreted. That's a very interesting topic. Lots of interesting things. There was one article, though, that I came across that I thought, you know, that's, you know, it's pretty good. It's by Adam Grant, who I guess did a TED Talk. It wasn't about this, it was about something else. But the article was titled, "Unless You're Oprah, quote, Be Yourself, unquote, is Terrible Advice." And when I read the title, I knew exactly what he was talking about. And I'm always up for people pinging around the outside of flesh and spirit and seeing how people think about flesh and how that they probably are missing a piece or two in their conceptions. I'm always up for that. So I read the article, and sure enough, it was what it was. He was talking about the fact that when he was preparing for his biggest presentation of his life, being on the TED stage and making a TED conference talk, he said he had already thrown out 7 drafts, and obviously when you're doing that, you're starting to get a bit frustrated. So he said he was looking for new directions, started asking his friends, and he said basically the same tip he got from all 7 people. And they said, well, the most important thing is to be yourself. And he said, you know, in this age of authenticity, he said, be yourself is really kind of the defining advice for life, love, and career. You know, that. That when we say you need to be authentic, that really what we're talking about is you just need to erase the gap between what you firmly believe inside and what you reveal to the outside. You know, Brené Brown, who I've loved her talks. She's done some great TED Talks. She's a professor at University of Houston, and she defines authenticity as the choice to let our true selves be seen. Now, what's wrong with that? That sounds like a great thing. Well, as we'll soon see, that doesn't work out so good. But I think the reason that it doesn't work out so good is because there is not one true self, but there are, in fact, at least two, quote-unquote, true selves. And that's where the issue comes in. Anyways, so he was talking about Oprah, and she was saying, was quoted at one point as saying, I certainly had no idea that being your authentic self could get you as rich as I have become. She said, if I had known that, I would have tried it earlier. Now, one caveat to that is that the interesting thing about Oprah, like all outliers, is it wasn't just what they did that put them in the position they're in. Fact is, you will have other people at the same time that has happened who are just as talented, who are just as authentic, who are just as everything as Oprah was, just as everything as Justin Bieber was, just as everything as every major breakout person has been, including the Beatles. And if you look at their history, what you find is it is not exclusively their effort, but it is, in fact, a collusion of their effort and being at the right place at the right time. And, in fact, there is a large component of what some would call random chance. There just is. You look back. I look back on my life and, you know, I've been above the ground noise twice now. Once from just sitting in a room and building a computer program. Another time from sitting in a room and watching TV. Both highly improbable events that a whole bunch of other people were doing. And yet they led me to getting above the ground noise. And by that I mean to at least some level of national attention and all the corresponding things that come along with that. So that it's really interesting. We've got to be careful, I think, when we hear this kind of advice that's thrown out from people who are successful and think, well, if I just replicate that, then ta-da, you know, I'll be that successful, which it doesn't work out that way. So he goes on to say, for reasons that we'll talk about in a minute, but for most people, be yourself is actually terrible advice. He said, if I can be authentic for a moment, nobody wants to see your true self. We all have thoughts and feelings that we believe are fundamental to our lives, but are better left unspoken. And he cites the author A.J. Jacobs, that spent a few weeks trying to be totally authentic. This was like a decade ago. He announced to an editor that he would try to sleep with her if he were single and informed his nanny that he would like to date with her if his wife left him. He informed the friend's 5-year-old daughter that the beetle in her hand was not napping but dead. He told his in-laws that their conversation was boring. You can imagine how his experiment worked out. As an author, he concluded, deceit makes the world go round. Unquote. Quote, without lies, marriages would crumble, workers would be fired, egos would be shattered, governments would collapse. Okay, so the author of this article goes on to talk about the fact that how much you aim for authenticity depends on a personality trait called self-monitoring. If you're a high self-monitor, you are constantly scanning your environments for social cues and adjusting accordingly. You hate social awkwardness and desperately want to avoid offending anyone. But if you're a low self-monitor, you're guided more by your inner states regardless of your circumstances. In one fascinating study, when a steak landed on the plate on their plates, high self-monitors tasted it before pouring the salt, whereas low self-monitors salted it first. Psychologist Brian Little explains, it is as though low self-monitors know their salt personalities very well. In other words, they just conclude, well, this is going to need more salt, because I always put more salt on it. So they don't even test the hypothesis, they just dump salt on it. Okay. So anyways, he goes on to talk about, you know, more things about high self-monitors and low self-monitors and all that kind of stuff. And it's all very interesting. But he eventually gets around to a fascinating conclusion. Gets around to a fascinating conclusion that I think points out what we're trying to get to by should you be authentic or not. And he talks about stuff in business. If you want to go read the article, again, you can go read the article from the title, which is, let me give that to you again, Unless You're Oprah, Be Yourself is Terrible Advice. So you can go do that again. Anyway, so when he talks about benefits of high self-monitoring, low self-monitoring, okay, so then he finally concludes by saying, if not our authentic selves, what should we be striving to reach? He said, decades ago, the literary critic Lionel Trivin gave us an answer that sounds very old-fashioned to authentic ears. We should be trying to achieve sincerity. Sounds good to me. Instead of searching for our inner selves and then making a concerted effort to express them, Trilling urged us to start with our outer selves. Pay attention to how we present ourselves to others. I'm backing into my garage. One moment. Backing. Okay. Backing into my garage. Present ourselves to others and then strive to be the people we claim to be. There's a Dr. Ibarra, studied consultants and investment bankers. She found that that's not important. So the shift from authenticity to sincerity might be especially important for millennials. Most generational differences are vastly exaggerated. They're driven primarily by age and maturity, not birth cohort. But one robust finding is that the younger generations tend to be less concerned about social approval. Well, at least in person. Certainly, there was an article that I was going to do a talk on that talked about young people and how they are buried in the virtual worlds and everything hinges on how many likes they get for their pictures. Anyways, authentic self-expression works beautifully until employers start to look at social media profiles. Anyways, so at the end, he said, next time people say, just be yourself, stop them in the track. No one wants to hear everything that's in your head. They just want you to live up what comes out of your mouth. Okay, and therein is actually a good bit of advice. Because this all becomes clearer, I think, if you realize that there is not one true self. That there is, in fact, two, quote-unquote, true selves. There is flesh and spirit. And if you are authentic and choose to reveal spirit, what you find is that will go pretty well, because it really, spirit has within it this idea of sincerity, that I'm going to tell you what I'm going to do, and then I'm going to do it. I'm going to be true to my word. I'm going to understand the social cues around me and the environment. I'm going to treat others as I wish to be treated. I'm going to be kind and gentle. Because a lot of that flesh stuff that just spews out of your mouth, if you just say whatever pops into your head, a lot of it's just plain not true. And then a lot of it's cruel. A lot of it's unkind. And all you're doing in that is you're just encouraging the flesh in other people, because flesh always breeds flesh and spirit breeds spirit. So if I was going to tell people how to be successful in life, truly successful, sincerity is a great goal. But beyond just sincerity is graciousness, mercy, love, kindness, generosity. It's all those fruit of the spirit, long-suffering. Do all that. Because when you do that, you not only improve the environment around yourself, you also improve the environment within yourself. And in my book, that is a way to define being authentic. So when I say you should be yourself, I'm really saying you should be your best self. And your best self is living a life guided by the Spirit. This is Phil Farron. And I have made it home.